And welcome to Thrift Shop Biography. This is the one about Mommy Dearest. Thank you for listening.
So, this week we have been reading Mommy Dearest by Christina Crawford, which is her account of being the child of Hollywood legend Joan Crawford. Now, I always ask you at the beginning of every podcast. See, this is because we've only read autobiography so far. Yeah. I usually say to you, what did you think of that person? So when I ask you this week, what did you think of the person before? I can't ask you. I need to ask you what you thought of Joan Crawford, because was Christina Crawford on your radar at all before today?
Yes. This book, I've been on my list to read for years.
Okay.
Because it's the legendary book.
Sure is.
I think it's the first that I know of. Big expose by someone's kid that really told all. And there's been loads since, but I think this was the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And what did I think of her is I have a big interest in this era of Hollywood.
Yeah.
And I'd read a book on about her and Bessie Davis making Whatever Happened to Baby Jane. Not that I remember specifics about it, but just that they were both hated each other and all the rumours were true. Yeah. So I already thought she was a monster bitch, and I was waiting to find out just how big a bitch she was.
Yeah.
Now I know.
Yeah. Mommy Dearest obviously is part of popular culture. I mean, people dress up as her at Halloween and and carry wire hangers around it, because there was a film.
I didn't know that wire hangers bit, you know, until I read
what?
It. What? I now realise it's famous, but I didn't know.
Oh, really?
I'd never seen the film.
I would say, like, if you were doing word association and somebody said Mommy Dearest, you would say wire hangers.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
It's like the most famous beard.
All right. I never saw the film, and I found out since, talking about this book, just telling people I'm reading it, loads of people have seen the film. Everyone.
The wire hangers are so famous that Victoria Beckham did a music video where she lost the plot and she goes into her closet and comes out with wire hangers.
So it's like the go-to crazy woman.
Yeah, she's like parodying that scene. It's that famous. That
I didn't know. Obviously, Faye Dunaway did a really good job of it.
No, a terrible job, apparently. It's become a camp classic.
Oh.
It won all the Raspberries that year.
Did it?
Yeah, I had no idea, because I'd never seen it either.
Well, it will be really interesting for us now to watch it.
We need to go and watch it.
Because maybe it wasn't over the top. Because maybe it seemed over the top, because no one could be that crazy. But she was.
So, was she?
Well, I believe everything I read.
I tell you something, it's a difficult book. I found this book extremely difficult, to the point where if we weren't doing this, I wouldn't have continued reading it. Because, I think child abuse it's something, you don't read it lightly, you know?
Yeah.
Obviously, always believe the victim.
Yeah.
And I do. And but there was just something about this book that kind of made me think a couple of times, is she making it up?
Oh, no, because see, I read, after I finished it, I read a few things, you know how you do, you Google things, and it had a big backlash when it came out, and a lot of Hollywood stars seem to have said they don't believe it, and they never saw that, and people were around their house, and Helen Hayes apparently said, well, I did think she was too strict with her kids, but that's all they said. But then you read that, and you see anyone who abuses people do it extremely cleverly.
For sure.
Yeah, soon as the door closes, this is the show. Just like Jimmy Savile, bad English paedophile. You know, I mean, he's legendary in his lifetime for being amazingly great with kids.
Yeah,
that's how well he covered it up. So, of course, nobody would ever know.
Yeah.
Because that's what these people do, they cover it up.
But even Bette Davis, who, like you just mentioned, famously didn't get on with her, actually denounced this book. And she said, it's a horrible book and I don't believe it.
Well, it is a horrible book.
Yeah. Maybe then people don't believe it. And like I was thinking, I don't believe it because it's just so awful.
Yeah, I reckon.
And you don't want to believe that. So the people, the famous people who have come out and said, you know, this isn't true, is because they don't personally want to believe that they were friends or...
Yes.
One of their contemporaries was just this vile.
And also they probably saw the lovely side of this person.
Well, that's what she did a lot of the time. Yeah. She was using the children as props to make herself out to be a wonderful mother.
Yeah. But also she was probably lovely to some... Actually, she was probably an asshole to a lot of these people, though. They must have seen her temper. And also I'm thinking it would be really easy if you're a journalist to find out which of this is true, because you could go to her teachers the people she loved. You could find the nannies. You could interview all the staff that came and went through the house who witnessed. There's so many witnesses that actually were in the house. So the woman who pulled her off from trying to kill her, things like this. You could go to any of these people. It'd be easy to find out.
Here's the thing. You know that when we've been reading this book, I actually dipped into the audiobook.
Yeah.
But the audiobook is a 40th anniversary reprinting, and it has extra material, much of which is like references from Christina's friends and school friends backing up her story.
Wow.
That was the bit when I was listening to them, I was going, this seems a bit much. Why is she getting people to verify her lies?
See, there's so much to this, because another thing I read was, it wasn't even that long ago. It was something like the 40th anniversary of it coming out. The two youngest sisters, adopted sisters.
Yes.
Sued her for defamation of character.
Yes.
Like, left it all those years and then did that. So maybe that's why she has to back it up.
Yep. Do you know what we should do? Yeah. We should go back to the beginning and tell the story.
Okay, so yes. Know. Because
some people listening might not have a clue what we're on about, and all we said is Joan Crawford.
Let's tell you a little bit about why.
Joan Crawford was such a terrible mother.
Yeah, and that's an understatement. And I think we have to talk about it, assuming this is real. Because the detail in this book...
Like I said, it's not real, it's fine.
Okay, I assume that this book is real. I'm
more than happy to listen to
you. That's where I'm coming from. Yeah, yeah.
You know, I studied Shakespeare. You know, one of the things I was taught to do with Shakespeare is analyse a text.
Yes.
I'm only going by the words which Christina has written herself.
Yes.
And when we get there, I will tell you when she's lying.
Wow. That's interesting. And by the way, listeners, we have refused to talk about this book at all until now. And we've been like bursting to talk about it. So I don't even know what you think about it. I don't really want to know.
So why did Joan Crawford adopt in the first place? And where did she get them, etc., etc.?
Okay, well, brief synopsis up from 0 to 35, right, which is the age she was when she adopted kids. She grew up poor, really fought to become a performer. Then she didn't even have the money for dance lessons. She was dancing in a yard and bare feet, cut her feet up, couldn't possibly prostituted herself at some point.
Oh, wow.
There's just rumours about that. It just drops in little bits all the time, doesn't it? Because she obviously doesn't know the history of her mum. Her mum never told her.
That was the one thing I wish there was more of in the book.
I agree.
Going back to find out why her mother was such a bad mother. What happened to her.
Yes.
And there has to be a cause.
Yeah.
She didn't just decide to adopt all these children.
No, it has to be.
But we don't know. We can only speculate.
Yeah. I mean, she obviously didn't have any sort of stability at home or a real father figure. And possibly her mum's third husband, it said, tried to seduce her. So there's obviously abuse of some sort gone on in her life, if possibly more rather than less.
But also, you think she's like a young starlet back in coming through in 1930, 1940s Hollywood. What a horrible place for an attractive young woman.
Yeah, I mean, the casting couch and all that.
Yeah, she'd have been abused
all over. It's
very
unlikely that she... Yeah, you have to be hardcore and...
Yeah, no,
go
for
through
sure.
it just to get somewhere.
Yeah, definitely.
It's just the way it was.
Do you know one of the things that really surprised me? Is that she has her actual birth name. Sounds like a movie star.
Yeah,
and they changed it to Joan Crawford, which sounds like a school teacher.
Yeah,
what was her name? Lillian Lafleur?
Or Lesueur. Yeah, it's
That's
lovely.
Why they changed it. Nobody could say
it. I guess it would sound.
Yeah, it's just such
it's exotic
a nice name.
Sounding,
And then they ran a competition in the magazine. Yeah. So they ran a competition in the magazine and loads of people presumably entered. And the best name that was sent in was Joan Crawford.
Craw McCrawface. It suits her though, because she's hard as a Joan Crawford, isn't she?
Yeah.
She's hard as nails.
Yeah, for sure. But is she? Now here's another question.
Is she?
We have been born after Mommy Dearest.
Yes.
Right. So we only know, that's my perception of Joan Crawford can only be muddied, if you like, by the reputation of Mommy Dearest.
Yeah.
I have no idea how the public regarded her in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s.
Yeah.
Was she like Nicole Kidman? Did people like her? Or was she like Sandra Bullock?
She was absolutely loved, and she'd sell any film she was in, and she had a massive career. And she was at the very tail end of silent films and the beginning of the talkies, and she obviously had a really good voice, elocution, all that stuff. And beautiful, and a really good actress. Properly,
but did people like her?
Realistic, they must have loved her.
Did they think she was a nice person?
I can't say that.
Yeah, see, it's kind of lost.
But then all the images once she'd adopted Christina, all the little girl in the matching dresses—they're all lovely. You'd look at that and go, "What a lovely woman! What a lovely
That's
kid.
Why she did it.
Yes. Yeah, so, but
it was a public relations exercise, yes, wasn't it? Yeah, children. Soften
Seems
her up.
Seems that way, doesn't it?
Make her look like a nice person.
Either that, or she imagined that she could have a child and mould them into her, doing her bidding, not realising you can't control, because a lot of people actually have children thinking that, not realising they're their own people.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's a bit of a shock when they have their own personality. Yes. You know, it could have just been that. She just had a romanticised idea about that she'd do it better and make perfect people.
Hang on, where did she get them from?
The first two were...
Stolen babies, right?
No, it wasn't. It was those two twins 8 years later.
Were the stolen
So-called
ones.
Twins were from the stolen woman. Now we need to explain this.
This is the biggest revelation, yeah. Which isn't really in the book, is it?
No.
This is your own detective work.
Yeah, I was just Googling her. Can't remember why, but you know how you do. And it just recapped, and She adopted Christina, and then the brother
Christopher,
and then two babies that were twins, but they're not proper twins, were they?
Well, that she was probably lied to.
Yeah, well, yeah. Anyway, those two, it said she adopted them before it all came out about this woman and the trial and the prison and
Dorothy Tan. Was that
is her that name?
Her name?
And
Tennessee Children's.
I said, hey, what? If people are American, they've probably heard of this woman. We hadn't.
I had never
ever heard of this woman who'd kidnapped or got by ill-gotten means over 5,000 babies. It's insane.
And sold them to rich people.
Hey,
it's a business model.
Definitely they reckon 90, possibly more.
She was killing babies too.
Just letting them die, killing them if they were troublesome. Yeah,
probably ginger, weren't they?
Stop.
You can't rehome ginger babies. Nobody wants them.
What? But they don't have any hair when they're little.
I know, but she couldn't rehome them, so their hair started growing.
Shave it.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, you could. Just shave it until... If that really was an issue.
Yeah. Where did she steal 5,000 babies from?
I don't know.
That's a lot of babies.
It's a lot. She was going to homes of, single mothers, young mothers that might have had them officially adopted.
Okay.
Or couldn't decide. And she was filling their heads with horror stories and that the government would take them. And I'm the government, we legally... Just lying and just manipulating people.
And then selling them to Hollywood stars.
Yeah.
So presumably, this is something we need to investigate.
Almost need her.
Yeah.
Except it's
what a story.
It's so sinister.
Yeah, I know, which is why I'm surprised it's so sinister how we've never heard of it before.
Yeah. I wonder if Americans have.
Are you listening?
Legendary. It
Tell us
be.
If you know about the Tennessee Children's Home run by Dorothy Tan. Because that's a lot of children, a lot of rich people
who ended up having...
Yeah. Oh my God.
What?
Christopher. So Christina's
brother,
they had a magazine article about them and they published his real birthday and his real mother found him.
Oh, that's the first Christopher. Yes. And then after that, she got another boy called him Christopher. And after that, she changed their birth dates.
That's right.
Both their birth dates.
Wow.
And she'd also changed her own birth date so that she was 5 years younger or something.
Oh my God.
So it's just
So Joan Crawford knowingly brought up stolen babies, did she?
Well, yeah, if you really knew that it was all done legally and correctly, you wouldn't try to hide their origin.
Yeah. Oh, and that's the thing. Don't forget that when she had Christina, she drove like 4,000 miles to Las Vegas or Nevada.
Officially adopt her.
Because it was one of the few states you could do it.
Yeah.
with a baby that didn't go through the proper channels.
Right, to legalise it. Yeah, so she knew it wasn't legal.
Yeah, people were saying, why is this mother with this tiny baby driving 4,000 miles? Wow. Because it was one of the few states you could basically get it done on the black market. Yeah. Yeah. So she, no, Joan Crawford knew that her babies weren't going through the proper. No, and I tell you why. It's because the process was too long. Yeah. It was too lengthy, the adoption process, and she was on her own.
Yeah.
So she would have had to have come and been vetted. Mm. And she's a single mother. So she kind of took it into her own hands. She got a stolen baby and she drove across the country to get it legally, illegally verified or whatever.
Yeah.
Damn.
Like you said, she bought babies on the black market.
Yes.
She literally did. She just went shopping.
Wow. I'm just trying to think if there's anything... Because obviously this is Christina's book and she obviously can't remember anything when she was a baby, only what people have told her. But presumably Joan Crawford wanted babies. Mm. Or do you think it was... It's just hard to imagine what she would have been like with babies. I mean, I guess she had help.
She had nannies. She's not, and she was not like she's breastfeeding or anything. She didn't have to do the really hard stuff, did she, at all?
Yeah, right.
Not at all. She didn't even bother getting up till lunchtime. I mean, she didn't want them to make any sound. She got them cleaning the house. She's wanted servants.
I think kind of one of the good reasons of having children is if you can get them to clean the house.
Oh, yeah, I really get why. Do get that stuff, yes.
It's just that most children don't. They don't even clean their own bedrooms. And that's why you have to hit them with wire hangers.
Good Lord.
But so, in the early days, she got a lot of magazine coverage with her photographs of her and the babies, Joan at home.
Yeah.
So they really served a purpose. And they were beautiful children, weren't they?
Yeah, but they very much seemed like they were for publicity. Oh, we must mention that after she got famous in Hollywood... She was then famous for about 15 years before she did this. And in those years contracted to big studio, she was mega, mega successful, huge star. Every big film, every big co-star, sold out cinemas. Everyone loved her. And then around that few years before that, it was starting to drop off because she got old. 35 was old. And her film career was on the decline.
Right.
So at that point, you go... Right, publicity. Right, I should move to my next phase. I'm going to be a wonderful mother. I'm going to show this side because all she ever did was work to promote herself, which is admirable, how hard she worked to stay current.
Yeah.
And she succeeded in that. And that was maybe almost like creating your own picture, your own film, you're starring in the role of mother to a wonderful, perfect family.
I mean, she would really, like, set the stage of her home life when the magazines came to take pictures. It was staged, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, but, like matching outfits, polishing the fireplace, smiling, answering, primed them on what questions to answer, how to answer them, all that.
And the Christmas presents.
Oh.
I mean...
It's so harsh.
It's really mean.
Yeah, it's nasty.
So the children would come down... well, before Christmas, and there would be literally hundreds of gifts wrapped under the tree. They were only allowed to open them when visitors came.
Yeah.
So it's almost like the gifts weren't for the children. They were for the benefit of visitors.
All the cameras
coming to take photographs. The gifts were purely so Joan could be seen and what a wonderful, generous mother she was.
A lot of them were from friends and fans, though. A lot of them genuinely for them.
But then here's the worst thing about it. So the kids finally get to open the presents. And then when Christmas is over and all the guests and cameras have gone, they get to keep like
one or two
gift, and the rest of them are given away.
Yeah. I mean, fair enough. It would be spoiled to have that many gifts. It's just that... To a little kid, how confusing.
Yeah.
And it's just the whole notion that they realised that everything was for show and nothing was real. And they were expected to be in awe of this present. Thank you for this, thank you for that. And then knowing it was fake.
Yeah.
Anyway, obviously there's worse things that happen to people and that did happen to them.
I'm not sure there's many worse things that happened to you than having Joan Crawford for a mother.
No, I don't either. And then the other thing that happened to them was they had to spend the rest of the Christmas holidays writing thank you notes.
Oh, what is it with the thank you notes?
Oh, my God. It's just punishment. Everything there they was did was punishment. Punishment. And she'd write them, and then she'd take them down and she'd go, cross through this line, cross through that. Yeah. That's not good enough. And of course, it's just nonsense. And send her back up to rewrite them. And she said sometimes they had tear stains on them because she'd spend all day for the rest of the holidays writing thank you letters.
Yeah.
So she had to go back to school.
Yes.
That's just a punishment.
It was a punishment. Honestly, everything she did to those children was a form of control, yeah, wasn't it?
But really unpleasant. Like, you can't have a happy childhood because I didn't, so you can't.
Yeah.
This is not what it felt like.
I thought you meant you.
No, you.
Did you ever have a childhood?
Yes, it was fine.
Yeah, me yes. too. Never hit with a wire hanger.
No.
And I got to keep all of my Christmas presents.
Yeah.
And I don't think I ever wrote a single thank you note. That's what
I did. Did you? Not lengthy ones, and not five times over.
Your mum didn't stand over you.
No, so. And also didn't have that many presents, so I only had to write about three.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, Christmas presents aside, thank you notes aside. But, you know, it was constant, wasn't it? The kind of controlling abuse that they were subject to. Yeah. I mean, and it was physical too, right? So she played these mind games with the thank you notes, but she would spank them and stuff, wouldn't she?
Yeah. In reading it, I have to remember that this isn't just anecdotes. This is a continual, hour in, hour out, day in, day out, constant fear of what's going to kick off.
Yeah.
And that's your whole childhood life up to about 17. You're in constant worry, and she's getting ill and she's getting headaches, and literally it's really, really messing up this human being.
You know, the one bit that I really hated, because I was made to do it at school, where there was something she didn't like, something on her plate at one lunchtime. Really? Was it like a piece of beef or something?
What happened to you
at school? If you didn't finish your plate, you had to sit there. And it would go cold. It was, of course, you don't want it now. But poor Christina Crawford, there was kind of like a piece of beef or something she didn't like. But what happened, it wasn't just a case of sitting there until she finished it. It was put back into the refrigerator. And every mealtime that she came down, the same plate with the same food was put in front of her again.
And then it was put outside for her to eat it.
That's disgusting abuse.
It's obviously gone off. It was like 5 days. I can't remember what it was, but it's...
Do you know the other thing as well? It's kind of like, obviously Joan Crawford is doing that kind of thing to her children, but this is Joan Crawford. She has a staff. There are other adults in this equation seeing this abuse happening. Yeah. And you kind of think, okay, just the power dynamic with someone like Joan Crawford, those servants and staff are probably too scared.
But they were sacked. You know, there's loads about it, how many they went through. There's not a staff in Hollywood left that hadn't been through there and sacked.
Yeah.
And anyone who seemed to like them or show them any favour was immediately.
Sacked, you're right.
Or if they seemed to like the staff, if she got anything that they liked them, they were gone.
I remember that was another form of just being mean, getting rid of
just
the staff.
Isolating you, so you've got no friends, you've got no one to turn to.
Actually, you know, you just reminded me about the spanking. Now, the men that would come in and out of Joan's life would often, Christina and the children would call them uncle. And there was one that they quite liked. And she said that she'll never forget the first time that he spanked her.
Yeah.
Because she said it was such a betrayal.
Yeah.
Because she liked him. And I think the physical abuse is bad enough. But in this situation with this awful mother, suddenly there is an adult there who you might like, might seem safe around.
Yeah.
And then they spank you.
Yeah.
And it just changes you. Yeah. Like, you could trust
no ally,
adult.
No one. Oh, yeah. And we've got to mention, well, there's obviously these night raids. Not obviously.
Oh, yes.
There's night raids where she...
Like the wire hangers is a good example.
Crazy. Yeah, and I knew nothing about this. She's just asleep in bed. Her mum crashes into the room. Oh, God, does she throw her off the bed? I can't remember. But she goes into her wardrobe and starts flinging every single thing out, every piece of clothing, every shoe, everything, into the room, screaming and shouting. And then says, what? No wire hangers, as she said.
Yeah.
Throws all the wire hangers into the room.
No, because the clothes should be hung on, you know, those nice crochet wooden hangers and stuff, you know, because they had expensive clothing.
But why has she suddenly gone mental about that? Who knows? You'll never know. She's just...
Oh, I think a lot of these things are spent, like when she wrecked the rose garden in the middle of the night and she got the little kids to come down and pick up all of the thorny stems and stuff. I don't think there's any rhyme or reason to it. I don't think anything particularly triggers her. I think she's just in a rage.
Yeah.
And she takes it out on the children.
Not sane.
It's not sane.
They're not justified things. There's no... You can't go, oh, she's probably mad because of that. Well, that's probably justified. She just went a bit far over the top. No, it's completely insane. I'm going to hack down all the roses in the middle of the night and try and chop the tree down as well and then get them to get the whole household out, including your own children, to pick them up and wheelbarrow them out so they're gone by the morning. They've got blood all over their hands. That's not... I mean, seriously insane. It's really unhinged behaviour.
Yeah. And it's kind of awful as well for those kids. You know, like you say, they're treading on eggshells all day long and then they go to bed.
Can't even sleep in peace.
And they're not even safe in their beds. Because at any time that monster could come. Oh. What does she do to the brother?
Oh, God, I remember that wire hangers thing. Obviously, utterly terrifying. She doesn't know if she's going to get hit. Her brother's across the room in her bed, but he's strapped down to the bed. Because he's not allowed to go to the toilet in the night.
Oh, my
God. So he's strapped down so he can't go to the toilet. And it's this bit where it describes him trying to turn around just to say, are you all right? But he can barely turn around to look at her because he's strapped facing the other way.
Why is he not allowed to go to the toilet? Did he do something once? Like, did he get into trouble walking around at night? Well, that's barbaric to strap a child to a bed.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
God.
And she said very occasionally she'd unstrap him so he could go to the toilet if he called out to her. But it was terrifying for both of them because she said the punishment would be worse on her for unstrapping him than it even would be on him because she would have ultimately disobeyed.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like some sort of Dickensian workhouse nightmare. Just because it happens in this rich, beautiful home with money and glamour, it's as bad as a workhouse.
And they're like children at this point. They're like children. 6 and 7 or whatever, aren't they? Oh, poor things.
And what I've really come to conclude to a point that I think, you know, because we're left trying to work out why she's doing these things because it's not explained. Alcohol is a huge part of it. It's an absolute alcoholic, a raging alcoholic who hid it really well.
Yeah.
And later in her life, she doesn't hide it as well. She's obviously hammered and it's really showing. But I think she was a functioning alcoholic for her whole life, and those are drunken, really drunk rages.
And you know, like you say, she has men in her life who don't, a succession of men in her life who don't treat her very well. Mm. And you know, we can put the pieces together, what limited information we had. She probably didn't have a great childhood or a great teenage years, and the stuff she would have come up against in the industry, being a young actress back in the day, she had a lot of anger.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Which then, I guess, manifested itself into addiction and alcoholism.
Yeah.
And she took it out on the children because they were there.
They were there, yeah.
Yeah. Man.
But right at the end, I thought, oh, my God, this is a story about alcohol.
Yeah.
That's what I thought.
So eventually, Joan sends Christina to a boarding school, right?
Yeah.
Do you remember how old she was? She's not old, is she? She's like, around 10.
10, yeah.
Yeah. So do you think she does that because she's just fed up with her at that point? Or is that just something that people did? A lot of Hollywood rich people send their kids to
school. Oh, they all did that. Yeah, they all did that.
So here's the first bit of my text analysis, which made me think that Christina was...
not always telling all the truth.
Embellishing.
Okay,
exaggerating.
That's good.
She said that when she went to boarding school, she got very homesick.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't, why would she be homesick of this place where this terrifying monster came into your bed at night?
Because it's all you've ever known. It's
so you
that
would be
Stockholm
homesick
syndrome, isn't it?
Oh, I think it's beyond that, isn't it?
It's really confusing all the way through. She's obviously really confused because she wants her mum to love her. And she sort of loves her, but she hates her and wants to kill her as well.
And I wonder if that's, because it is a running theme, you're right.
Yeah.
And I wonder if there's something about the psychology of an adopted child.
Yeah.
Because you want it to work so bad.
Yeah, I think so.
And even though you're mother is just despicable to you.
Yes.
You still crave.
And it's all she's ever known, anyway.
I think that's okay at the moment, but eventually I have something else to say when she gets older.
Yeah.
I found this book really hard to read anyway, because it is episodes of... But it's like the original Misery memoir, isn't it?
It seems to go on so long, the Misery, talking of Misery.
I think the whole book's miserable.
Well, it is actually, it is. But when's she going to get free of it? When's she going to... And she,
no.
It goes on and on.
I know, but even when it's going well, I find it miserable, because I'm kind of like, oh my God, why are you still here? Yeah. Why have you even let it go?
Did you not run away the first chance you got?
But anyway, she's 11 years old.
Get a job and just be free of it.
Yeah.
It's so complicated though, the relationship in her head, and wanting to be loved by the only person who, pet family she's got.
Yeah, and she has her brother who's not, is an adopted brother, right?
Yeah.
And he got the brunt of it as well. He just never wrote a book about it. But reading between the lines, he's as abused as she is, right?
Absolutely. She says it a little bit, but not really. It's obviously his story to tell. She didn't feel like she should. But she drops it in, yeah.
I think perhaps, if we're talking about betrayals and stuff, I think perhaps the biggest betrayal is when Christina is 11 years old at boarding school. And she goes off with the stable boy?
Yeah.
Am I jumping ahead too much?
No, she's only 11.
Well,
it's
do you
just
know what?
So huge an adult at 11.
Right, text analysis time.
Yes, yes.
This shocked me so much.
Right.
So, listeners, what happens? Christina is at boarding school, and at the age of 11 and a half, it's an all-girls boarding school. And there is some kind of affiliated school or something where there are boys, and the boys work in the stable and the girls go horse riding. Anyway, some of the older girls have been going down to the stable and coming back all flushed and giggly. And then Christina, you know, thought, oh, I'll have some of that, not quite knowing what's going on.
But she definitely fancied this lad.
You see, now here's the thing that's debatable. I'm not even sure he's a lad because of what he says to her. So anyway, one night when there's some kind of concert going on, during the interval, Christina gets away and she goes down to the stables and she meets this lad, boy, young man, who she says is six feet tall.
Did she say 16, though?
She doesn't say an age.
Did she not?
No.
Oh.
I don't remember her saying an age.
I feel like he was 16, but I don't know.
If he's 16, I think it's really bad anyway.
Yeah.
So they start kissing, bearing in mind that Christina is 11 and a half with this 6 foot tall lad. They start kissing and then they start, presumably, I mean, she doesn't say it in as many words, but do you think they started having sex?
Yes. Yes. Because then she said it was suddenly painful. She didn't know what was happening.
Yes.
Because later on they tested her and apparently she was still a virgin, so it's obviously painful. And then he stopped.
Yes,
because
and
he
then
said,
he says, how old are you?
Yeah.
She says, I'm nearly 12. And he says, oh, I thought you were about 14.
Yeah.
I mean...
But 14 would be a lot closer to 16.
But here's the thing, text analysis.
Yeah.
He says afterward they stopped doing what they couldn't do. And he said to her something along the lines, I'm paraphrasing, don't just give it to anyone. Wait until there's somebody you care about. What flipping 15-year-old says that? I think that's an older person. I'm not talking about 30, but I think it's probably somebody who worked in the stables,
right,
not another
maybe
boy.
Maybe early 20s or something. Yeah.
I just don't think a 15-year-old gives a little lecture to a 12-year-old.
So you're just questioning the age of this person, but not whether it happened or not?
No, and I don't think it matters so much whether it happened, because for all intents and purposes in the school, the gossip thing goes into overdrive to the fact that the teachers find out about it. They call in Joan Crawford because this is a flipping scandal. She's 11 and a half and she's been off with the stable boy. Joan Crawford calls her in front of the teachers a common whore.
Yeah.
This is your 11 and a half year old daughter.
Yeah.
That's shocking.
And you victimise her.
Oh, I mean, is this when she takes
totally
all of her clothes away?
Yes.
Fuck.
She took away all of her clothes and she had one dress to wear for the next 6 months.
And she wore it until it was threadbare, didn't she?
Yeah.
But God, she's just like a despair. despicable woman.
Everyone in that school was talking about her. Boys all thought she was available. She had that for a good year or two.
Oh, it took a long time for her to get the respect of her classmates back. From the age of like 11 and a half, 12.
Yeah.
I mean, my God, what an awful life she had at home.
Yeah.
And then she goes to school.
Yeah.
And then there's no escape. That's a fairly confused
kid. She said, I always saw my mother just sitting in her underwear talking to all the uncles that came to visit while she got ready. She saw all these men come in and out, you know. That's what she was taught. She's to try and find out what it was all about. You know, I mean, it all makes sense to me that all that stuff happened
Does
to her.
It
makes complete sense. And it's tragic.
Really tragic. After this school, does she go to the convent? Does she go to the Chadwicks? I can't remember.
They had an argument about, I think she'd gone out for the evening with a friend. The woman had asked about a classmate. And Jonah said, oh, she got expelled just like you. And she was like, I didn't get expelled. You pulled me out of school.
Right.
When she got home, she said, why did you say I was expelled? I wasn't expelled. I don't want people to think I was expelled when I wasn't. And she said, you're the parent here. I'm the child. You should know, or something. And that flipped her. And she started hitting her, beating her to the floor. I was throttling her. And she thought she was going to die. And she did everything she could to try and fight her off. And she couldn't. And she was losing consciousness. And then a member of staff came in. And she remembers hearing them saying, you're going to kill her. Trying to pull her off. But she says it wasn't the physical violence as much as seeing her face.
Yeah.
Which I can relate to. It's happened to me once by a stranger. When you see someone's face who you think's going to kill you, it's that intention from another human being is what stays with you. That somebody intended that 100% to kill you is that was your mother. Fucking hell! I mean, any one of these things that happened to her would be traumatising.
But it's just a catalogue,
a lifetime. Fucking hell.
Do you know what? And then she says, like, at the age of 15 or something, she's sent to a nunnery. And I think, oh, no, this poor girl, she's been through enough.
But that's when she sends her, because at that evening, so she gets away to her room and then she gets called down because there's a bloke from the juvenile delinquent place to interview her. And she thinks, oh, my God, he's going to help me. And he isn't on her side. It's like she needs to learn how to not aggravate her mother. And that's when she gets sent to that nunnery.
And do you know what? I was really worried for her when she went to the nunnery, but they ended up being really nice to her.
They were lovely, lovely nuns.
It's the first nuns I've ever read about being nuns.
Non-abusive nuns, yeah.
Don't send her to a convent. Yeah. Enough.
Yeah, I know.
They ended up being really
nice. Thank God.
Yeah.
I mean,
praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord. Lovely, lovely nuns. Yeah. Unfortunately, sometimes she's trapped there for the whole summer holiday and nobody's speaking.
Yes.
Because they take vows of silence. I mean, imagine there's people there, but no one's speaking. Oh, my God. At least she got to work in an office. The more I think, she's obviously very, very competent. This is why she can write a good book. She's very well educated and very competent. She's, you know, she's got that going for her, if nothing else. What I wondered about that, her sending her away after her beating her, I wondered, did she send her away because she genuinely thought that she was unsubordinate? Is that the right word? Unsubordinate?
Yeah, a naughty girl.
Yes. was needed controlling, so sent her to a nunnery to get her behaviour on track. Or did she send her away because she couldn't face seeing her knowing what she did? Did she ever have any remorse?
I think that's the longest, when she went to the nunnery, wasn't it the longest she went without seeing, without going home?
Yeah. At that point, yeah.
Do you think she, do you know what the thing is, like if she is an alcoholic and stuff, or she does go into these fitful rages, there is going to be remorse unless she's a complete sociopath, which I don't think she is. Do you think she is?
She never ever there's never any implication that she's sorry in any way. She follows through, she holds on to things, punishes her for long times. That makes me think she thinks she's right. She thinks she deserves it all.
Yeah, and that she's justified in meeting out the punishments.
Yeah, I think there's no remorse. So I've just answered my own question. It isn't because she didn't want to see it, it's because she thought she needed putting in line, even though she'd said one thing and she nearly got killed for it.
Joan Crawford is a very strange person in so far, and I love this, all of her fans who would wait outside the gates of her Hollywood mansion, she would invite them in and get them to clean the house. I mean, that's amazing. Yeah.
And doing all her fan mail.
Doing all of her fan mail. In fact, to the point where, like, a couple of them ended up as quite long-term employees, didn't they?
And she'd abuse a load of them, shout at them, and they'd still stay there because they loved
her. Because they loved her.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, whose house would you clean? Would you have cleaned Paisley Park? Would you have
queued? Of course I would have. Not every day, though, maybe once or twice.
I think that's so funny that she put her fans to work.
Yeah, but it's kind of genius. They're going to be hanging around trying to see her anyway. Yeah. They might as well do something.
So her and her brother go to this school run by this older couple called the Chadwicks.
Oh!
And Joan Crawford can't afford the school fees, right?
True.
And those, the old couple who established the school, the Chadwicks, actually really take a shine to Christina and her brother. Mm. And she ends up living with them.
They're the closest she had to real parents, she says.
And Joan hates them. And in fact, when Christina kind of, not run away, but she told Joan she was going to see her friends and she actually went back to visit the Chadwicks.
Yeah.
That's when Joan lost
really
the plot again.
Flipped. Yeah. She did. She got a year for that. She got a year. That was when the nunnery.
Right.
She got a year. I've written it down here to remind myself.
Yeah.
1 year in a nunnery, prisoner for nothing.
Yeah, it is weird, like, seemingly the stuff they would get punished for.
I mean, it's just an excuse.
Yes.
It's monstrous.
Yeah, she already knew that she wanted to kick off and abuse her children.
Yeah.
How she got from A to B.
Yeah.
It would be the most tenuous
thing.
She'd invent stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it is remorse. And I can't believe I answered that question because I was wondering. It's obvious it was remorseless.
Remorseless.
Yeah, remorseless. She carried on and on and on. Yeah. Never, ever ended. And then, well, I don't want to say the end. But
well, no. So where are we now? Should we talk about when they actually reconcile a bit? Are we jumping ahead too much?
Well, nobody. I don't know if we're. Well, we don't have to regale the whole story, do we?
No, it's kind of. Well, because it's so actually quite repetitive.
Yeah.
It's just basically. Joan Crawford was just a monstrous bitch for the whole life, even when they were young adults.
And there was a slight reprise. But it's amazing when she's at school and the radio's on and she hears that Joan Crawford got married and she's never even heard of this man.
Mm-hmm.
And then she goes mad at her for not being in touch to say congratulations when actually she was in Las Vegas and she didn't know where. She actually always manages to turn it back on her.
Yeah.
Anyway, she married Alfred Steele, who was the boss of Pepsi.
Pepsi Cola, yes.
Like, I was sitting there reading going, in my fridge is a can of Pepsi,
yes.
Which is possibly there because of Joan Crawford.
Yes.
Which is really weird.
Yeah.
Obviously, this bloke had taken, this bloke had taken Pepsi from a provincial drink that was only in one region, and he'd already been amazing enough to promote it all around the nation and get it second only to Coke.
Yeah.
But when he married Joan Crawford, she then became the ambassador to it. She's massively famous and she had a revival around that time with Mildred Pierce, which was a big, great film. And so she was back on top again and just toured the nation and the world promoting Pepsi and doing adverts and working really hard. And that's possibly why there's a kind of Pepsi in my fridge.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It's bizarre. Who knew there was a connection?
Lots of people who were alive at the time.
Yeah, really loads of people. That's why they bought Pepsi, yes.
Yeah.
So she was loved. There you go. Otherwise, she wouldn't
have
sold Pepsi.
Right, yeah, she wouldn't have sold much Pepsi if
they loved her.
People didn't like her.
Yeah, and that's when Christina thinks she's loved again because she gets pulled out of school.
She gets pulled out of school.
For this two-month holiday.
Yes.
Which seems to come from love.
Yes.
And disappointingly, obviously, it comes from a promotional tour.
Yeah, it's just a PR thing.
To make it look like Joan Crawford with her new husband and the happy family in their lovely new clothes and furs, touring here and there.
The first class travel and limousine. Oh, what an amazing holiday there.
How amazing is that to have your own train carriage
yes.
with dinner in it
yes.
and wine when you're about 12 or 13?
Yeah. So they had this trip of a lifetime.
Trip of a lifetime.
Which she loved because the children kind of thought, oh my God, we're... And they liked him.
They liked him. He sounded lovely.
Yeah, they did. And he took an interest in them.
Yeah.
And then they find out, as soon as the trip is over, they're bundled away again. And they realise it was just one big photo opportunity.
Oh, 2 month photo opportunity. Leaving to get outfits and furs and all that stuff because she'd been deprived of clothes and everything so long. Oh my God.
But, you know, nice holiday.
Really nice holiday. Oh, yeah, she goes to visit the Chadwicks to tell them about it. That's when she gets banished for a year.
Yes. And do you know what's worse about that whole fallout with her mother from visiting the Chadwicks is it was at the time when they're like leaving school. So all of their friends are having their leaving parties and stuff. It's the last time Christina's going to see a lot of her friends.
Yeah.
And she obviously wants to attend these parties. And Joan Crawford says, no, you visited the Chadwicks. Yeah. You lied to me. You can't go. But not only that, Joan Crawford actually wrote letters to the parents of the people whose party it was, telling them that Christine could not attend because she'd been insubordinate again. I mean, she really just controlled everything.
It's appalling.
Even to the fact where she wouldn't even let her daughter. It's bad enough that her daughter is not allowed to go to the party, but not allowed, allowing your daughter to tell her friend herself.
Yeah.
You have to write a letter to humiliate her as well.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, she was wicked.
She wasn't even allowed out of the building down the road. You know, she was confined. Yes. It's total imprisonment. Prison. And all her friends go home in the summer and she's in a silent nunnery.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's around this time because Joan Crawford is bleeding the Pepsi man dry.
Yeah.
Right. And he's having to like take out loans and remortgage and stuff to keep up with her lavish lifestyle. And it's at this time that they sell the childhood home.
Yeah, yeah.
The, you know, the location
for all of these library. Which was already remortgaged anyway.
Okay.
I think... At least.
Text analysis. On, Christina talks about being very, very sad that her childhood home is being sold.
Right.
Because of the way that she feels about it and the memories there.
Right. Oh, yeah, she talks about walking around when she leaves it at some point.
It really, truly is the scene of all of these terrible crimes against your person. Wouldn't you'd you imagine, want it to be sold?
You'd imagine...
Yeah, I do imagine, which is why I think she's exaggerated a lot of this.
Yeah, I still don't. I can still understand.
Okay, at the end of this, I'm going to tell you something which will make you come out of my way of thinking.
All right, okay,
no, I get Stockholm. No, I'm still open-minded about the whole thing. I'm just saying there are a couple of things in this book, her own words that she used, which seem to contradict stuff that she said earlier. All right,
that's interesting. I should try and open my mind to another way.
But maybe it's me not wanting to believe all this horrendous child abuse as well, you know. Maybe I'm in denial. So, can we go on to where Christina is now, her own independent woman, living an independent life, happily still taking money from her mother and uncle number 16, the Pepsi guy?
Yeah.
So, at this point, this woman who's written this book about a terrible catalogue of abuse, from which is horrendous...
Mm-hmm.
As an adult, over 18 and into her 20s, she still maintains a relationship with her mother. Wouldn't you just at that point, if somebody had been so vile to you your whole life, isn't that
run
the time to
the
say
hills.
Goodbye?
Yeah. But she does describe that. But you see, she describes how when she went to college, it was such an eye-opener because she didn't know who she was. She didn't know how to do anything or be anything. She'd never done anything for herself. She absolutely fish out of water. She had to pretend she knew how to pay rent or do anything. She had housemates. She had to pretend she knew how to open a can. She didn't know anything. So it's like a person's just been let out of leg braces and learning to walk.
Yeah.
She's completely disintegrated as an actual, fully formed, strong person. She isn't. She's mentally crippled, really.
So you're saying that she's still... A dependent on her mother and brother, so she couldn't make a break. Even as an adult, she can't make a break anyway.
And she's been to this place, and when she was at that nunnery, describes the lowest, lowest place. She cried for months, and she was suicidally depressed, I'd say. Almost stopped eating, stopped eating. I think she's a complete mess. She said when she went to drama school, she had days where she couldn't even leave the room. She just stare out the window. I think she's so low and so weak, I didn't know she had the strength to...
I have another question which I think undermines her book.
Yeah.
So this mother, who's been so awful to her, who's a celebrated actress, why does she want to become her? Why is she taking acting lessons? Why does she become an actress herself?
Yeah.
Why doesn't she do something completely different?
Well, she does even address that herself. She says, what, if I had any sense, I would have got out of it then... You know, and she saw it as different. She, her mother was on the screen and it was in studios and it was in a blackened space, whereas stage is completely different, which it is, to be fair.
No, but she did end up going on to a soap opera and films and stuff.
Yeah, but she didn't start out.
She wanted to be an actress like her mother.
Yeah,
I think she does. I think her actions and what she writes are very weird. You talk about Stockholm Syndrome, right? You know, you in the press in the last 10 years, a couple of times, there have been cases where young women have literally been held captive in basements and stuff. And they do form relationships with their captor.
But they still get away.
But at
the
some point,
they
make the break.
Yes, yes.
And Christina never
You must
has.
Have also read cases of where the person is always in love with them for the rest of their life. You know, there's things like she continued to write letters. Gaslighting.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that going on. I think she's writing with hindsight, but when you're right in the middle of it, she's still getting these letters saying, I love you, I miss you from your mother, and blah, blah, blah. She's getting them continuously. So she's being drip-fed one thing whilst she's looking at it now, but in the middle of it, was it her fault? Is she bad? Is she evil? She's still getting letters. It's really, really mentally deranging to a child.
But the letters, no, I get what you mean, because the letters are in the book. And if you didn't know the background, the nice letters are actually really lovely.
Yeah.
But she also sends letters where she's said really awful things.
But
it is very, she's hugely manipulative.
Yeah.
I tell you the most telling thing about all these letters, when she signs mummy at the bottom, it's always in inverted commas.
Yeah, because I'm not really your mum.
Oh, my God.
She's the title.
That's so weird.
Oh, God. It's not.
I mean, there is, like, you know, like a family connection, a loyalty. This is an odd case because it's an adoption as well. I don't know if that makes it worse or makes it harder or makes it easier, actually. I have real trouble.
How many beaten wives love their husbands and can't leave them and will never leave them? It's like that. And so all I'm arguing for is to try and support the fact that I believe she wanted nothing more than this woman to love her.
I think that
Christina
has exaggerated much of the abuse, and I think her mother, especially when Christina became a young adult wanting to be an actress in New York, I think her mother was too much of a meal ticket to leave behind. She financed her and she had all of her connections.
Yeah.
And that's why she maintained contact.
Yeah.
Which kind of says to me the abuse could never have really... But I've even thought maybe Christina made peace with herself, maybe at the age of 18, and said, okay, my mother's been really wicked, I could leave her now. Actually, or I could try and use her and get what I can out of her to further my own life.
Well, it wouldn't surprise me if she'd gone cold hard somewhere inside her that enabled her to be able to do that. You know, just shut down.
Do you remember the bit in the book where her mother and the Pepsi guy, sorry, her dad at this point, meet her for dinner in a restaurant?
She pays a dollar.
She needed a dollar tip. And Joan Crawford says to her, pay them the dollar. And it was Christina's last dollar. She said, pay them the dollar. I'll just go and sort it out with your dad. He'll give you some money. So Joan goes out to the car. Christina gives her last dollar as a tip. And when she goes out of the restaurant, the car is pulling away.
Yeah.
And so basically Christina has zero money. And at that point, I'm thinking, why is she relying on her parents for cash at the age of 25
or whatever? Well, she wasn't. She'd have had a dollar if she hadn't given it away. But no, that they are giving her a taste of the high lifestyle that she loves. She loves being taken to restaurants. You know, all the fine stuff. She loves going out with her mum to the theatre and seeing shows.
I think it compromises everything she said in the book at the age of like 25, 26,
It does compromise it, but it's her story. That's what happened to her. It's for us to analyse why. And,
she's an imperfect victim of abuse.
Yeah, because I'm sure abuse makes you completely fucked up and all over the shop.
Yeah, no, I shouldn't judge away anybody. responds to a lifetime of abuse.
To me, it's like she's laid it all out, and it is for us to make those conclusions. Oh, you know, maybe, because she doesn't really say so. Yeah, maybe she did like some of the highlights. Maybe she loved going to her mum's amazing apartment. And maybe she loved going to the theatre with her and all the people she'd meet when they're at restaurants that come over the table. She'd meet all these amazing people. There's a load of good stuff that must have happened.
Yeah.
I mean, it's that complicated, isn't it?
It's extremely complicated. But also to the fact where this overbearing, wicked presence throughout your whole childhood, which basically defines your life.
Yeah.
Well, then you end up writing a New York Times bestseller about it, which permanently cements you to that for the rest of your life.
Yeah, yeah.
That's an odd choice as well.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, I wondered, and then, shall we mention what happens at the end then?
Oh, because, my God, it's amazing. Yeah. It's like the best twist in any film I've ever seen.
Because after they've become friends, they're
I don't think we've said that enough. So they actually develop a very good friendship for years, right?
After she got married to a Broadway director, which met with her approval, and they had those years, and then she got divorced, she was then properly devoted to her mum, probably needed
so they have years of a really seemingly lovely and caring relationship, which blew my mind, actually, after everything.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're in a good place.
It's really good.
And Christina's health had huge health problems. But then her mother did too, and Christina was there for her.
Yeah, then she wasn't because she moved to LA. And I wondered if that was the problem, because she'd abandoned her instead of being in New York and they being there for her. She'd chosen to move away.
Okay.
But anyway, meanwhile, they'd maintained her relationship. She'd met somebody, she changed her life, blah, 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 blah. Then Joan Crawford dies, which isn't a bombshell, because she'd be 199 by now.
We all know she dies.
Yeah. And they go to the will reading, and her and her brother have been cut off, though not just cut off, but cut off brutally. And it says, for reasons known well to them.
This was the shocker, actually, because you think, okay, she's had managed to salvage this relationship with her mum after everything. Okay, her mother's died now. Right now, she gets to have something from her mother. Yeah. She gets some money and they go in.
She just gets to have some peace.
For the will reading.
She doesn't even get that.
She doesn't even get peace.
Nope.
They're both told they get nothing. And the mother says...
It says she felt like she'd reached out and slapped her from the grave.
Yeah.
Which she really had. Because when you read that, did you go...
Oh, yeah. It's an amazing,
shocking
piece of work from a major bitch.
It's seriously, seriously shocking.
Because also she knows that that's going to be read out and printed in newspaper. Well, what does it say?
Like that. I can't remember.
For reasons they know, they're not getting anything from me. For reasons that they know well.
Yeah.
And they rack their brain.
For reasons which are well known to them. Out of nowhere when you think you've got a good relationship. And that was broadcast and it was on the news and there's loads of speculation. Everyone, it became legendary that they were cut off.
And at this point, don't forget that Joan Crawford is still the one that everybody knows. This book hasn't been written yet.
Yeah.
Most people. So actually, people would believe Joan Crawford's
absolutely. Work. There's a lovely woman who did so much for charity and adopted children. They all thought it was amazing because she adopted children.
So when that's kind. Read out on the news for reasons it best makes known them to themselves, seem it's turned evil and bad. Yes. And it's amazing, I have to say.
It literally turned the world against those two people, because not even four kids, but just two of them.
I mean, it is a streak of evil genius, if you want to look at it that way.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
It's a parting shot, and you're a mega bitch. But it makes complete sense as to why she wrote this book 1 year later, because she was like, "Oh my God, I have supported you. And you're not having the last word. You're not defining who people think I am for the whole world." Because she went to that memorial, and they were like, "Who are you?" They didn't even mention their family.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, she's like, "Okay." No, I'm going to say who you actually were. I did get this book from that.
You know, like you were saying that everything she did was, that Joan Crawford did was remorseless.
Mm.
And we were saying, is she a sociopath? Mm. The fact she could spend the last 10 years of her life seemingly having a nice, loving relationship with her daughter when all the way through she knew that this was coming.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, no, I think this book probably is, it is a backlash to that. I mean, yeah, she needs to get some money. She got no money from the will.
And it comes right at the end. I was like, oh, this book makes sense.
But
you're putting your side over.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean it's not exaggerated.
It doesn't mean it isn't. On the other hand, you couldn't make that shit up. It's because you would. It's because you would have left and never looked back. But that isn't necessarily what everybody isn't you. Everyone would do different things.
I think that there is truth in it. I mean, you know, if the book was My Mum Joan Crawford Was a Bit Unreasonable Than My Brother, it's not going to sell 100 million copies, is it? But if you say she hit us with wire hangers and she called me a Nicholas whore or whatever it was, then that's outrageous. Yes, and everybody wants to read that.
Yeah. I've read Marlene Dietrich's daughter's account. Yeah. That's meticulously written. And it's quite possibly worse than this. It's different, but it's... You think nobody was monitoring these children. There's no... There's just no authorities paying any attention.
Yeah.
There's nobody monitors their schooling or anything that happens at home. These people are bought and owned by these rich people who literally just purchase a human.
Yes.
The ultimate slave, you know, for
like
them.
A pet.
Yeah, or just to do their bidding.
Yeah.
To be the ultimate fan, you know. That's what she says are fans of the ultimate people she loved, because they'll just... She just needed yes men. It's exactly the same with Marlene Dietrich. It's that possibly more shocking. We will have to read it. And maybe the combo of both of those make me sort of not doubt for a second this stuff happened.
And the one thing which would make me believe this book more was if she had researched into her mother's childhood or just got anything that could make us think, oh, that's why she is behaving
the way she is. Yeah, I think that. I think as a book... It really falls down on that, because
you know when you
doesn't...
watch a film like a horror film or a thriller, but they don't give the villain a credible backstory. Oh,
yes,
they're just nasty for the sake of it.
I
agree. Kind of what this feels
as
like.
As a book, it falls short, but once you get it in that way, definitely. That's why I was googling to try and find out more about her.
Oh, there is that thing about the baby chickens.
Yeah.
I forget it now. Was she on a farm?
Yeah, when she was young.
She was playing with a little chicken and she squeezed it too hard and it died.
Yeah,
right?
She was like, oh, cute little thing.
Which you kind of, I understand that. Kids don't know their own strength.
It goes
when you kill
limp.
The first one.
It goes limp. And so she puts it down, picks up another one to play with. Six.
Does the same. So she's basically...
Until they get her off them. Squeezes the life out of people.
Yeah.
We haven't even mentioned that Albert Steele, the Pepsi man, only lasted 4 years and died of a heart attack.
There are serial killer vibes coming from Joan Crawford.
Jesus. But the thing is, she'd nearly bankrupted him.
Yeah.
She'd spent all his money, had that massive penthouse redone, and just throwing his money around. And he'd had to take a loan out on his future earnings at Pepsi, which he didn't even live to earn. So no wonder he had a bloody heart attack.
Even when he died... They wanted her, Joan Crawford, off the board of Pepsi.
Yeah.
And she said that she would rubbish the name of Pepsi. So they had to keep her on and keep paying her.
Wow.
She's a bitch.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, what I was going to say is, as a book, I think, it would be a much better book if it also ran alongside explaining her bit more. But then when I realised at the end why she wrote it, I realised she didn't actually have time to research a full book.
Yeah.
She wanted her side out as soon as possible, because the whole world were bad naming her,
bad mouthing her.
And she just needed to get it written and get it out there. But you, on the whole, believe this book. You just think occasionally she's exaggerated.
I don't disbelieve the general thrust of it. I think Joan Crawford is incredibly problematic.
Yeah.
I think she's a terrible mother. I think she should not be anywhere near children.
Yeah.
I think the journey of Christina being the victim, I find her actions as an adult and the things she says in the book to contradict the catalogue of terrible abuse which she claims happened to her.
Yeah.
That might make me a terrible person.
I don't think so. I just think it means you don't understand. You might be... Firstly, you might be right, because I'm not... Definitely, I wasn't there. But secondly, I just think it's really, really hard to understand that somebody's been through that and then doesn't run away It's really hard to understand. Mm-hmm. And I bet there's tons of people out there that have read this book and gone, oh my God, that's my life.
Right.
And I'm still attached to this abuser. Yeah. Oh, there must be tons of them out there.
Yeah.
It is so complicated. Everyone's story's different. Everyone's different. To conclude, I feel like it's very interesting that both of us have taken this slightly differently.
Yeah, we are different people.
Yeah, we have different opinions. It'd be very interesting to find out what other people think about this book.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you're running the Facebook page.
Hope people read it and then join in this debate.
Do you honestly want an online discussion about...
I would absolutely love to know other... No, I found your... I didn't know that you question any of this at all. And I find that amazingly interesting, and it'd be really interesting to find out who else thinks what.
Yeah, well, they have to read the book.
Yeah, you kind of
Mommy Dearest. It's like a pound on eBay these days. Go and get it.
Yeah, Christina Crawford.
Yeah. But look, I can't say I enjoyed it. That's the thing. Mm. And like I said at the beginning, were we not doing this podcast, I wouldn't have persisted with it. Mm. It's not to say it's not a well-written book or anything. It's just I don't like reading about child abuse, to be honest.
Yeah,
it was quite hardcore.
It's really hard. I did enjoy it. I couldn't put it down. Couldn't wait to get back on the train and start reading again.
Yeah.
Wanted to know what's going to happen. Oh, fascinating.
Can we read something much nicer next
time? A bit more upbeat now.
Let's go thrift shopping and
get a pop star or something.
Yeah. All right, see you next week.
All right. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Thrift Shop Biography. We love making this podcast, and we're absolutely thrilled that so many of you are already listening. We're new to this, and you could really help us out by leaving us a review somewhere, wherever you listen to this podcast. And if you could share us, tell your friends about us, or drop some links on social media. We have a Facebook page called Thrift Shop Biography, so make sure you come over there to hear about the episodes first and what else we're up to. Okay, see you next week. And if you're new here, there are loads more episodes now to go and listen in the back catalogue, so make sure you go and enjoy them. Okay, thank you very much. Bye.